Welcome to UN Weekly, I'm Conor Lennon. Godfathers of climate chaos. That's how Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, described fossil fuel companies during a keynote speech to mark World Environment Day, in which he also called for a ban on fossil fuel advertising, likening fossil fuels to the tobacco industry. We're going to hear what the UN chief had to say a little later on in today's show. World Environment Day is held on the 5th of June, and it's an opportunity to remind people of the devastating effects of the climate crisis in many countries, including Afghanistan, which has been particularly badly hit. Hundreds were killed by recent flash floods in the north, and at least 20,000 people lost their homes. We're going to hear what the UN's doing to help affected communities, and what effect the policies of the Taliban, the country's de facto rulers, are having on aid efforts. And we'll also celebrate World Oceans Day. That's on the 8th of June by finding out more about an exciting project which is using artificial intelligence technology that could lead to humans being able to communicate with whales. Let's just hope they're not too disappointed with what we have to say. And talking of AI, I want to welcome my colleague Anton Uspensky to UN Weekly. Hello, Anton. You're not artificial intelligence, I know, but you have been particularly interested in the topic over recent days.
Hello, Conor. Yes, honored to be on the program. Hello from Geneva.
Interestingly, Anton, you're wearing exactly the same clothes as me. This is becoming a bit of a habit. The same thing happened on last week's show. But I understand this is not the official UN uniform, just pure chance. Nobody's going to believe us, are they? Can I just talk a bit about your background there? For those who don't know, there is a very important UN office where you are in Geneva, the Palais des Nations. Where is the Palais des Nations? What's it all about?
Well, Conor, I am indeed in the Palais des Nations, the Palace of Nations in Geneva, which has always been for very long for many, many years, being the capital of international diplomacy.
Let's just dive straight into it, shall we, into our news roundup. And before we go any further, we should say a few words about the latest airstrike on a refugee camp in Gaza, which we heard about early Thursday morning. And our colleagues from UNRWA, with the Agency for Palestine Refugees, they had some pretty troubling news. We understand around 37 people dead during this airstrike, which was hits a Gaza school, a school which is run by the UN agency. And there's been quite a lot of reaction from senior UN officials.
Yes, indeed, Conor. It's just another one in the long series of unfortunate events and tragic events during this conflict. Indeed, the school, UNRWA school, was hit, and since the beginning of the conflict in October, all schools have turned into shelters where lots of people try to get protected under the UN colors. And here is just recent from Philip Lazzarini, head of UNRWA, who said that another horrific day in Gaza, another UNRWA school turned shelter attacked. This time in Nuseirat, in the middle areas, hit overnight by the Israeli forces without prior warning to the displaced or UNRWA. There is also a comment by Catherine Russell, head of Children's Fund, UNICEF, and she says the children in Gaza are living alongside mountains of trash and raw sewage, and basic services reach a breaking point amid continued fighting and displacement. This just depicts the situation in Gaza, and the recent airstrike is just another terrible addition to that.
Yeah, horrific situation for the civilians living in Gaza, lack of clean drinking water. And we've also had a reaction from the head of the World Health Organization, who's been talking about the really difficult health conditions there. And you can find all of the information about this story and all the other stories we've been writing about Gaza. Of course, there's been a lot to say about Gaza since October on our website, news.un.org. Well, look, let's talk now about climate, Anton. We're going to start now with a speech from the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, to mark World Environment Day at the American Museum of Natural History, which you might know from the movie Night at the Museum. The Secretary General often makes strong climate speeches. He didn't hold back on Wednesday, and he described fossil fuel companies as the godfathers of climate chaos. Now, this is where Mr. Guterres called for an end to the promotion of the industry. Let's have a listen.
Dear friends, many in the fossil fuel industry have shamelessly greenwashed, even as they have sought to delay climate action with lobbying, legal threats, and massive ad campaigns. And they have been aided and abetted by advertising and PR companies, Mad Men, remember the TV series, fueling the madness. I call on these companies to stop acting as enablers of planetary destruction. Stop taking on new fossil fuel clients from today and set out plans to drop your existing ones. Fossil fuels are not only poisoning our planet, they are toxic for your brand. Your sector is full of creative minds who are already mobilizing around this cause. They are gravitating towards companies that are fighting for our planet, not trashing it. And they also call on countries to act. Many governments restrict or prohibit advertising for products that harm human health, like tobacco. Some are now doing the same with fossil fuels. I urge every country to ban advertising from fossil fuel companies. And I urge news media and tech companies to stop taking fossil fuel advertising.
That was UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres delivering a special address on the climate on Wednesday. You can find full coverage of the event on UN News, and we'll put the link in the show description. Turning now to Afghanistan, that's one of the 10 countries most affected by the climate crisis. Around 23 million people there are reliant on humanitarian assistance. Despite the restrictions imposed on Afghan women by the Taliban, the UN continues to operate in the country. On Wednesday, my colleague Myra Lopez and friend of the podcast spoke to Jorge Moreira da Silva, the head of UNOPS, who's recently returned from a trip to Afghanistan.
In Afghanistan, we decided to stay and deliver, to support the people, regardless the relationship with the new regime. So our focus is supporting the people. And why is this so important? Because in Afghanistan, you have 50% of the population living in extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. 70% of the people have no possibility to buy food. Afghanistan is the most fragile context in the world, probably with Somalia, Yemen, and Sudan. I went there to see on the ground the impact of the work, and I was very impressed to see the impact on the people. I heard directly from the local communities in Kabul, but also in Herat, their participation on the design of the project. I heard women telling me that if it wouldn't be because of this project, they would not have access to some financial opportunities because they are the only source of income. I was also very impressed to see my team, 300 colleagues that are there. A big part of them are Afghan. A significant part of them are women Afghan that go every day, despite the difficult circumstances, they go every day to the office to work, even if they face, I insist, very severe circumstances. So, in a nutshell, I saw the project working, delivering results for the people. I saw my team being very engaged, and the fact that if we wouldn't have women working at UNOPS, it would be impossible to reach out to women on the ground to involve them on the project. And obviously, I also met the Taliban. I met the DFA. I met the Deputy Prime Minister from the DFA. I met a Minister of Rural Development. I met the Governor. And the message that I shared was very simple, but quite, I would say, emphatic. Mm-hmm. We decided to stay and deliver in this country to support the people. We remain committed in supporting the people. But it wouldn't be possible to go beyond what we are doing and to address new needs if the DFA, if the regime, does not do something very important, which is bringing girls back to the school.
Jorge Moreira da Silva, the head of the UN Office for Project Services, speaking to my colleague Myra Lopez from UN News. And the full interview is on the Interviews podcast. Now, Anton, let's turn to AI. We mentioned at the top that you have been having fun with robots and I'm assuming you're not a robot, at the AI for Global Good Summit, which took place, I think, just over the road from your office.
Yes, indeed, Connor. Well, in the beginning, you said I am dressed a little bit like you. Who knows, maybe I am your AI avatar.
It's
but
possible.
Anyway, last week was a very interesting, the summit was a very interesting meeting here in Geneva, which is already a traditional in its seventh iteration this time. It's a place where humans meet robots and robots meet humans. And I would say it can be divided into two parts a little bit because there is a huge, a very intense program of discussions of how the AI can be applied and how it can be regulated. But at the same time, there is a big exhibition venue which offers interaction with different AI-driven solutions, including robots, humanoids of different types. They can paint, they can sing, they can make music, they can even talk and interact and act as social robots. All that is aimed at using the AI for good indeed. So, but besides that, there are some other takes on robots. For instance, there was a robot with a swag. The idea behind that robot is to show that in the near future, that's what the creators of this robot believe, robots will be among us and we would need to know how to properly interact with them and not expect that robots would also always be nice in answering to our questions.
Sometimes so when you say swag, you mean they have attitude?
Exactly. That's a robot with an attitude. So you ask him a question and he cannot wait to answer something in a very, very, sometimes impolite way. But at the same time, this is something we should be accustomed to in some near future, they say.
So like in the movie Interstellar, where you could up the humor and the sarcasm level and bring it down if you had a bit of too much.
Exactly. Indeed, when you mentioned a science fiction movie, I would say that many of the solutions which were offered and demonstrated during the summit were indeed from a sci-fi movie. Different exoskeleton AI-driven, different solutions which allow people who cannot see move around, more or less like that would be for a self-propelled car. So all that indeed impresses. But at the same time, there is a huge other chunk of what is connected with AI, which is how AI can be used for different solutions to the modern world challenges.
Sorry to interrupt you, Anton, but in fact, our resident explainer, Pauline Battista, has been looking into how the UN is using AI. Let's listen to what she has to say.
Hi, my name is Pauline Battista, and this is the UN Explained. Today we're here to talk about ChatGPT. Actually, scratch that, I'm kidding. We're here to talk about artificial intelligence. First of all, what is AI? We can just say that it is a body of non-human technologies that can imitate a lot of what the human intelligence can do. So for example, experts say that in the near future, you may be able to get a computer-generated, customized song from your very favorite artist without them ever knowing you. Do you see why AI gets so tricky? So, what is the UN really doing about the whole thing, you may be asking? The UN Secretary General is convening a high-level advisory board on AI to come up with recommendations for the use of AI internationally. Did that make sense? Well, if you want to learn more about how the UN is helping us use AI for good, you can go to news.un.org and search artificial intelligence. Bye!
Pauline Battista doing her thing as our resident explainer on how the UN is using AI. Well, to find out a bit more, earlier I spoke to Fred Werner. He's the head of strategic engagement at the ITU. That's the UN's Agency for Digital Technology. He's also one of the founders of the summit. Well, he told me the AI is being used across the UN system and it's already making a positive difference.
We create an annual report on AI activities in the UN system. And we just published our report at the last summit last week. And we've identified now across our 40 plus UN sister agency partners, over 400 AI for good type applications in the UN system. So these are AI projects that might be used in the context of natural disaster management or human rights or in smart cities or, you know, how you use data. Sometimes it might be in the form of a policy paper, but other times it might be in the form of a machine learning challenge where you're crowdsourcing solutions from a crowd. So a really wide range of activities covering all SDGs. And what's interesting is we've been doing that report for a number of years now, and it's also been following that exponential curve. The first one we did, which I have to check my memory, was maybe after the second or third summit, only a handful of use cases in the UN. And then now there's like 400 plus, but also going beyond what's in that report. So for example, ITU has a number of collaboration efforts. For example, we have the AI and Health Global Initiative with World Health Organization and WIPO, where we've created 35 standards, specifications, and benchmarks and best practices on the application of AI in healthcare. Likewise, we've done that with AI and FAO for agriculture, or AI with WMO and UNEP for natural disaster management. So AI for Good has really served as a kind of catalyst, you know, bring all these people together who wouldn't normally get together, including industry and academia and NGOs and other international organizations, to really build collaboration and standards and best practices around AI.
So do you think then that we could say that lives are being saved because of the way we use AI at the UN? Or is that at this stage a bit of a stretch?
I don't think it's a stretch. It may have been a stretch of the first couple of summits, but there was a moment at the last summit about a week ago on the main stage where we basically beamed in to Portugal, where there was a patient with locked-in syndrome with ALS. He's 25 years old. His disease progressed super quick. Within 2 years, he can't move, he can't speak, he can't do anything. And using AI and brain-machine interface technologies, they were able to basically have him communicate with the audience from Lisbon, using his own voice and using the power of his mind alone. And it was such a key moment where when he heard the audience clapping, because he was speaking and communicating in his own voice, using generative AI and, you know, text to voice and using a recording of his old voice and using the power of his mind to select probable answers instead of, you know, typing, you know, one word per minute with the old technique. All of a sudden he's communicating with the audience and they start clapping. And then he had a smile on his face and tears at the same time. And I swear to God, the audience, half the audience was in tears. And I was trying to hold back tears as well, but I was organizer, so I had to compose myself. But when you see these kind of solutions happening, I know there's a lot of discussions around safety and privacy and ethics and sustainability, and that platform has used that for as well. But that's really when you see someone who's literally locked in and he's able to communicate again, you know, that's AI for good. And likewise, we had a champion wheelchair tennis player. I think she's ranked number 6 in the world, like an amazing athlete, but she's confined to a wheelchair. And she walked on stage for the first time in 12 years using a robotic exoskeleton. And she actually stood upright, and what it meant to her to be upright and have like the blood flowing and being able to be mobile in a way that just wasn't possible in a wheelchair. So the summit was full of these kind of life-changing solutions and life-saving solutions. We even had someone using brain machine interface technology to send a tweet from the stage to President Macron, and President Macron replied during the event, and that went completely viral. Okay, that's more on the, you know, the high tech side, right, of what you can do. But these are really things on the cutting edge of technology. And yeah, to answer your question, I think it is saving lives.
That was Fred Werner, the head of strategic engagement at the ITU. Fred had many more interesting things to say about AI, and you can hear the full interview on our UN Interviews podcast. Anton, thanks very much for being with us first, hopefully not the last time on UN News. Great to see you in Geneva. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, Connor. Have a great day too.
The 8th of June, Saturday, is World Oceans Day, and a host of luminaries have pledged to expand our perspectives and appreciation for our blue planet, build new foundations for our relationship to the ocean, and ignite a wave of action towards necessary change. It's easy for them to say. One organisation that's had great success in raising awareness of marine life in recent weeks is Project SETI, the Cetacean Translation Initiative, which may have the answer to the question, what if we could communicate with whales? Well, here to hopefully answer that question is my guest today, Fiona Corwin-Pawlowski. Hello, Fiona.
Hi. Thank you, Connor. So nice to be here.
It's a delight to have you here. Chief Strategy Officer for Project SETI, which does sound extremely exciting. So back to talking to whales. What can we learn from sperm whales? And how would it improve us and the world if we could hear what they were saying?
These magical creatures have been around millions of years longer than humans. They have so much to teach us about the ocean, about their ecosystem that they live in, and we are just so grateful to be able to research and work with them. You know, we know from our lead biologist, Shane Giro, who's been studying these whales for over 15 years in Dominica, that they live in matrilineal societies. They even have dialects and accents, and they have strong intergenerational bonds. So this is just scratching the surface of what we can learn.
Now, there's a link to the very beginning of the Save the Whales movement, which was, what, 60s, 70s, I think, which has been credited for completely changing the way people think about marine life, not just whales, but marine life and how we should protect the environment, very, very much linked to the kind of environmental movement. So how have things evolved from then? Because I know that it was all about the whale song. People realized that they have these incredible sounds, and people thought, yeah, these creatures need to be protected. And there was the whole whale meat controversy and stopping people from eating whale meat where possible. So now, is this like a new iteration of that? So rather than just listening to pretty music, we're trying to work out what they're actually saying to each other.
Absolutely. You said it so perfectly. You know, Roger Payne and his wife, Katie Payne, discovered that whales could sing in the 70s, and just by listening to whale songs sparked the Save the Whales movement, which led to the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which saved several species of whales from extinction in the United States. Roger was actually a special advisor on SETI before he sadly passed away last summer, and we are so grateful for the chance to just continue their legacy. You know, all of that goodness and progress and work came from just listening to whale songs. What if we could actually understand what they're saying?
And is this about decrypting their conversation, which is thought to be much more complex than previously understood? Or do we think we can get to a stage where we could replicate those sounds and actually talk to whales, talk to a different species?
That's a great question. So we do call ourselves a listening project, you know, really trying to continue that legacy of the Save the Whales movement. We view the new ways that we can look at whale communication using artificial intelligence as akin to the telescope or a microscope. We view it as a tool to look more deeply. And we are really interested in listening and learning and understanding what the whales are saying. We want to look at new ways to validate studies. And, you know, it's not that we are against playing back or, you know, using these findings to talk to whales, but that's not the point of the project. That's not our goal. Our goal is to really listen and learn and hopefully offer something that allows people to even reconsider their relationship to nature and humans' relationship. You know, we are dependent on interconnectivity with other species on this planet for our future.
And I'm presuming people can find out more and hear more on the SETI website.
Absolutely. We're at projectseti.org and also at Project SETI for all social media channels, and would love for folks to follow us and learn more about our work at Dominica.
And that's SETI, CETI. And just returning to Dominica, as I said, mm-hmm. I was there not that long ago. I had a fantastic time there. They set up a marine protection space. Does what you're doing feed into those efforts?
Absolutely. Well, our lead biologist took a big part in the creation of the reserve. And I also want to lift up our Dominica Marine Conservation Fellowship Program. This is a program for Dominican youth who are interested in oceans and marine protections and marine science. It is a 10-month curriculum that we created custom with National Geographic. So we're really focused on the next generation, and we're so excited by the possibility for youth to really take on the torch of marine conservation. And there's so much great work happening in the Caribbean region, so we're just thrilled to be working there.
And there is a link between your organization and the UN in Dominica.
Yes, absolutely. We are just starting to work with the UN Development Programs Accelerator Lab
for Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean. They are doing some incredible work using camera technology, 360 camera technology, in the region and in Dominica specifically. And we're looking at how can we shoot content and bring it to communities of people with disabilities or other people that can't access the ocean. This is all part of our mission to bring our findings and bring the ocean to people, to hopefully bring more love and protection for the ocean, which is why we're here today to celebrate World Oceans Day.
Oh, fascinating project. And again, that website is projectceti.org. That's CETI, C-E-T-I. Fiona, thank you so much for coming into the studios today and telling us about this really interesting project. I do hope that at some point I can have a conversation with a sperm whale.
Thank you for having me.
Now, that's it for today. And there's a link to World Oceans Day in the episode description. And a reminder, you can find the story of the Secretary General's excoriating, if that's the word, World Environment Day speech, the full interview about how AI is being used at the UN and how we're getting help to those who need it in Afghanistan, on our website, news.un.org. As ever, if you want to get in touch, you can email me, unweekly@un.org. Studio production this week was by UNTV. The editor was Hisei Kawamori. The executive producer was Mita Hasali. UN Weekly is a UN News production. We'll be right back.